The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of Kevin Jordan or his guests. These gardening tips and suggestions may work for you, as well as those from alternative sources. When using any garden products or tools, read and follow all label directions.
The Green Acres Garden Podcast is the podcast dedicated to helping gardeners hone their growing skills while we celebrate our love of plants. So whether you're new to growing or a seasoned gardener, you're sure to learn something new. Join the fun as we have conversations with world-class growers, passionate green thumbs, and professional garden experts from Green Acres Nursery and Supply. Listen every week. We'll answer questions you didn't know you had. And away we go. This is the introduction to the show of the greenest podcast around, the Green Acres Garden Podcast. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. I am your host, Kevin Jordan, and I love plants, love gardening, love growing, and I appreciate the people who appreciate it. So thank you one and all for being here back in studio to talk plants. We have a great topic this week. We're talking growing grapes from a true professional herself, Jennifer Thompson, a fourth generation wine grower out of Napa Valley, California. But before we get into that, let's say hi to our ace of the audio, Austin Blank. How's it going there, Austin?
Hey, Kevin, and hello, everybody. Welcome back to the show. And yes, I agree. Meeting Jennifer was such a treat. And, you know, it was also pretty awesome that this has never happened. This was a podcast first that we sit down for our interview, and then she pours us wine from her grapes.
I think we need to make it a standard issue kind of thing now. Yeah. Every interview starts with a little bit of wine.
It was pretty awesome.
Yeah, so we actually, and those were grown. That wine was made from the grapes that she grew in her 100-acre farm. Pretty incredible. It was interesting to taste something that, you know, somebody had grown. They're like, here, try this.
Yeah.
You know, it just really cool. Great interview. This was a huge find for us. It's kind of fun for us gardeners to kind of play farmer sometimes. And it's really interesting to kind of get some insight on, you know, tips from the pros. Like, what are the professionals, people who are actually doing this for a living, how do they cultivate their plants? And what's kind of cool with grapes is there are some people who want to grow some grapes at home. Table grapes, ones you can just plunk off and eat. I had like daydreams of just me laying back, Austin, and you just in the heat, just feeding them to me. Just like a Roman emperor.
Oh, we could arrange that.
Yeah. It's going to cost you, buddy. But no, I just love that idea. Or people, you know, making their own wine or just kind of just having them for ornamental value.
Yeah.
There's grapes are pretty cool.
I kind of forgot you could even grow grapes. I thought that was something that happened.
It's possible.
You
people
know,
do
at
it.
At the farm or whatever, you know, but you can do it at home. That's so cool.
And so it's kind of fun to kind of delve into the mind of a pro. Yeah. We're going to get some tips and hopefully give you something to think about.
All
so
right.
A great time.
Love it. So we met up with Jennifer at the Green Acres in Elk Grove. Thank you for coming out there, Jennifer. Let's go ahead and jump into that interview now. Here we go.
Jennifer Thompson, how are you doing?
Doing well. Beautiful day to be in Sacramento, California.
It truly is. You know, it's a beautiful day to be coming out of Napa. So I want to thank you for making the drive out. Tell us a little bit about yourself. Actually, you've come really highly recommended to us by our producers as an expert, someone we could actually really glean some information, some knowledge from. And hearing about your background kind of got me intrigued. So could you give us a little bit?
Sure. Thank you for having me on today. I drove over from Napa. It's true. Specifically, the Carneros region of Napa Valley. That's an American viticultural area. There are many throughout the United States, but it specifies kind of your area that you live and grow grapes in related to soil type, microclimate, various other water quality, and where varietals truly thrive. I'm a fourth generation California farmer. My great grandmother purchased land in the Carneros region in 1938.
Good job, Grandma.
Yeah, thank goodness she picked the right town.
Incredible.
She was a true Okie, came from Oklahoma during the Dust Bowl era, and bought this parcel in a property land auction. And so four generations later, I'm super proud to be a woman owner of these vineyards and truly carry on our family legacy that spanned four generations. My dad is 75 years old, and he saw sort of the fall of the economic decline of California pear growing. We were longtime pear growers in the region, and that's what Napa was known for before it became known as the wine grape capital of California and potentially the United States, really. And so today I prune with my crew. I order chemicals and supplies and fertilizers in order to make sure that we're growing healthy vines. I drive the tractor and I do mowing when I need to or when we're short on labor supply issues. And I have a guarantee to anyone who buys Thompson Vineyards grapes that if they would like me to, I will deliver their grapes with a ponytail and a smile on the back of a flatbed. It goes over pretty well.
Well worth it. That is incredible. You are a grape grower, farmer extraordinaire. I think this is the perfect time to have you on. Spring is kind of sprung. All of our plants are waking up. How are things on the farm right now? It's got to be a busy time.
Yeah, very busy. So spring pruning starts in about December. It can start as early as November, and it can go as late as March. I grow very cool climate varietals, which are Chardonnay, Pinot Noir, and Pinot Blanc. And so generally, when you only have so much available labor across California, or even again within your area of Napa Valley or Sonoma County, you need to dedicate your labor towards the vineyards which are likely to push or to begin the growing season first, and then work your way through varietals that come on much later. So having those young, early varietals like Chardonnay, we started about 2 weeks ago, pruning about 100 acres, and we just completed that activity this most recent Saturday. And so ultimately, now our crews will move on to other varietals like Merlot and Cabernet Sauvignon. And beyond pruning, there's another specific action that occurs in the vineyards, which is called tying. And that relates to whether you are a cordon style prune or a cane style prune. And most of our vineyards are cane styled. We can get a little more into that if you're interested.
Yeah, what's the difference?
So cordon is where you set up and train the vine initially from year 1, 2, and 3 to achieve a certain height, and then you train arms out laterally to create the infrastructure of the vine. And then year after year, you would come along with those same arms, that same wood and positioning, and just cut at each bud position on the arm. And so that then creates a shoot and a cane, and then the following year, you would come back and cut that shoot or cane back down to 2-bud position. And you would still maintain what I refer to as the arms of the vine year over year over year. Whereas cane pruning, you would select a new arm to go out and be the arm on the fruiting wire every single year. So what that does is it causes our pruning crews to have to think a little more technically about which canes they're selecting for fruitfulness, for vigor, for total health of the vine, as well as even distribution of the fruit across the arms, if you will. But it also adds to the longevity of the vine. And the reason why it does that by selecting new wood every single year to put down as an arm is that you're insuring yourself or your vine against potential for wood and trunk diseases.
Because using that fresher growth.
Fresh, exactly.
Is that new wood? Was that a shoot from the season the year before?
It was, yes. And so you've either selected that intentionally. So when the crew goes through and they're looking at a vine, it's not just what's going to take me through September of that year and harvest. It's also what's going to take me through September and what's going to be the next piece of wood that I select for the year following to put out. And so we'll leave renewal spurs or additional positions at the head of the vine that then will allow the crew more options. As we like to say it, you can always take fruit off, but you can't put fruit back on. And so that's why pruning is so critical during the season right now.
That sounds incredible. God, there's so much going on with grapes. Now we have to look through the lens of the gardener. We have a lot of listeners that they maybe want to grow some grapes as well.
Yeah.
Might be for some table grapes, could be maybe for some winemaking. I see them out there. It's possible. What are your thoughts for the home gardener in kind of taking the best principles and practices that you've discovered, but kind of shrinking it down for us normies?
Sure. I think you've pointed out right there, what's most important is decide, what do you want to use grapes for? Do you want to use them just for like an added benefit in beauty to, maybe grow up an arbor?
They do look cool.
They do. Do you want to eat them? Do you want to pack them in your kids' lunches? Do you want to have your own hand at, maybe making a 5-gallon jug of wine at the end? So first selecting, what do you want to do with the grape in the end of this? And for that, I would even go one step deeper. And if you've chosen, I love to eat frozen grapes. I love to put them on platters for appetizers.
So good.
I love to put them in kids' lunches. you need to select whether you want a seedless variety or you're okay with seeds. And so that would be your table grape varieties. Then you need to go a little bit deeper. Do you love the crunchy green grape, the Thompson seedless? Or do you want something that, you know, you're okay with that seed in there? A Fresno Flame or a Globe might have a seed to them. We have, I actually, as I was driving over here, wanted to come and report, as I sort of already have, you know, whoa, we've pruned 100 acres. We're done.
That's wild to think about.
Well, we didn't even get into, you need to tie all those arms down. So there's the added labor cost and action of tying arms down in order to get your trellising set up for success, or your vine working with your trellising to be set up for success. And that's what I would say about gardeners.
You do the same thing?
Pick a trellis. A lot of people say, oh, I love this grape, but then they go and they put it in the ground and maybe they don't actually get any structure underneath it. It's flopping over, it's growing. It is very difficult to kill a grapevine. So you can do
That's a lot of things.
It is. Yeah. I've seen one actually growing up through 3 inches of asphalt on Los Carneros Avenue. We call them tractor blight when one of the tractor drivers accidentally hits one with a tire. But that thing, if you straighten it up, put it back up in its position and give it some water, maybe a little fertilizer, that vine will keep on going. And so I just really encourage home gardeners that you do need to support your vine in a trellis format. So whether that is, you know, a T-post stake, or whether that's, wooden beams that you've selected, or an arbor is really great. Just remember that if you're growing a grapevine for many, many years, they can last 30 years or more when taken care of properly, that you may not want to put it on a redwood arbor, because that will ultimately eat away and deteriorate. Because the next phase in grape growing, outside of, you know, you've picked your varietal and now you've gotten it trained, you've got a trellis system underneath it, you've planted it, is that you do need to care for it. And what that means is the powdery mildew that comes along with grape growing is a battle for every gardener, right?
Yeah, for sure. It makes me think of at the end of the summer, like squash and zucchini, or,
yep,
you know, my crepe myrtles or whatever, some roses,
yeah,
powdery mildew.
There's an old folklore legend that planting roses alongside grapevines or grapevine rows in commercial vineyards will give a farmer the first notice that powdery mildew is evident.
Do they get them first, maybe?
It does, but there's some nuances. There's some very scientific things that go into what type of spore it is, what type of mildew it is. So I wouldn't use that that would be painting a very wide brush,
yeah,
stroke.
It's fun,
but
though.
It makes your garden look beautiful, have some roses, have some grapes. But it is important to do something, you know, that you feel comfortable with, that's going to protect that grape and get it to the finish line to be able to be packed in lunches, or
yeah,
be able to be made into wine. The last thing you want is, you know, a mildew-infested grapevine in the middle of your beautiful garden.
Does it usually come on towards the end of the summer?
No,
like other stuff,
or right now?
Really?
It now. So growers win the powdery mildew war, and it is a war. They win it in March, April, and May. And that means starting early. It means that even, I actually had a neighbor down the road the other day that said, Jennifer, I saw someone spraying already, and they had just maybe a quarter inch of growth out there.
They're like, nope, I don't want that.
Yeah,
mildew.
You have to, as the tissue is forming and as the bud is coming out of hibernation from the winter, we do a dormant sprays when necessary. It also depends on your varietal. So Chardonnay and white grapes are much more susceptible to powdery mildew. We are in a cool climate growing area of Carneros where I can see the San Pablo Bay from our reservoir. So if you just think about that coastal influence and heavy fog layer until 2 p.m. and then that really nice temperature of 64 degrees to 72, where you sort of still need a light jacket, but you're like, oh,
it's not quite
summer,
burning off the moisture.
That is all the best case scenario for a mess of mildew.
So you guys spraying fungicide?
Yep. So we spray, we use organic dusting sulfur is one of my favorites, because it's been shown out of all of the various different chemicals and products to use in a commercial setting. It's been shown to be the least disease resistant over 13,000 years. And so we use organic dusting sulfur, which ultimately puts a very fine mist and powder out into, and it gets in every single little crevice. So as that green material, as that shoot begins to grow, you are assuring that that dust has touched every single piece of the green leaf area, which is the host for powdery mildew. And beyond that, stylet oil, very common used in vineyards, at a 0.5% or a 1% solution, which is also utilized in your garden centers to keep roses clean.
A lot of our other plants, our bedding plants, some of the vegetables that we grow, they really require heavy amendments to the soil for them to be successful. But is that the case with grapes? I know they kind of have a more rugged background. Like, what's going on with grapes?
Yeah. So I guess one thing important to note is that grapes generally will come on a rootstock, just like your fruit trees.
Where it's been grafted?
Yep, where it's been grafted. And so any of those, local varieties that you might pick at your local nursery center have generally been grafted. So most important, I think, is you don't have to go crazy with amendments. It is, like I said, it's really hard to kill a grapevine. You do want to set it up for success. I usually put a little, I actually do have a table grape, a Thompson seedless, and a Fresno globe. And the Thompson seedless has yet to be planted. So you're reminding me of how I'm going to get this prepared. And ultimately, just a little organic fertilizer. We use a lot of worm castings, fish emulsion.
All the good stuff.
Yeah, just to like get it started. There's a little mycorrhiza packets, which have like a long release that I recommend. And I usually throw one of those in. It looks like a small tea bag with some fine granules, and what that does is it starts to, as you start drip irrigating, you'll start to break down the tea bag that it's held into, and then it'll start to break down those fertilizers, and it's just a slow release because it's very easy to plant a grapevine and then never come back to it, as with most garden plants though,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, right, absolutely.
And so I would then just water it. Grapes do require water, and then again, training and pruning are very important. Training it to a stake, getting it set up into the position, just like you would a fruit tree, some supporting branches with your then bud or fruitful positions will really set you up for success than opening it up and not allowing it to get fungus and pest and disease.
As things heat up, how often are you watering? Is it a deep watering? Do you let it dry out in between? Does it need to stay consistently moist?
I tend to like to water deep waterings once a week, 7 gallons or so. Now, when you're trying to produce commercial wine grapes, you're also trying to concentrate flavors. And so there's a little bit of theory in that you want to back off on some watering.
Just force them a little bit, stress them out.
Give them some stress. It makes the best wines. But we're talking with home gardeners who have made an investment. Maybe they've paid $20 to $30 for a plant, and that plant has a lifetime expectancy of 30 years, 100 years. There's still commercially producing vineyards. A historical vineyard society has been established that can look at vineyards that are 100 years old here in California.
Living roots?
Living roots.
Wow.
We have some 60-year-old vines that are still a commercially produced Pinot Noir, and it's just important to maintain the water cycle so that you are giving yourself insurance of your investment over the lifetime of the plant. And in this case, for your gardeners, they've invested their $30. They've spent all this time setting it up on a trellis system, and they've spent time, getting it just positioned so, and they want to take advantage of the fruits of their labor at the end of the season for many seasons to come.
Yeah.
And that's why it'd be important to keep up your watering.
Well, and so that kind of leads back to where we started, how you're getting things pruned up right now to get the year started. They grow so much throughout summer. How, when someone has one growing at home for their home garden, how much are they actually going to prune back at the end of the summer? Or do they wait till, you said December, you start pruning?
So a couple things. One is, I think you mentioned you liked hedge shears.
Yes.
Hedging is an important facet of grape growing. It is commercially. It also has an application in the home gardener's space. And that is, once you've reached about 4 to 5 foot of cane length in your shoots, then you would want to go ahead and top or hedge. You'll see small tendrils coming out from the vine. And ultimately, as long as those those keep growing. You know that the vine is still producing energy, but essentially I would estimate in this region of you know, Northern California, the Pacific Northwest, you want to start hedging around June, July in order to basically stop the growth of the vegetative foliage and start driving some of the energy into your fruit. And by that, I mean accumulation of bricks, which are sugar.
Yeah.
Accumulation of color, you know, really making that really beautiful color if it's a darker varietal. Maybe even filling out the berry size. So if it's a Thompson seedless, you're no longer dedicating all that water, energy, and fertilizer to just growing beautiful leaves.
Yeah.
You're actually concentrating the efforts into the fruit. So hedging is important. And that happens in, you know, again, depending on which varietal and which microclimate we're in, June, July, or August. And then some of your earlier varietals, you're going to start looking at harvesting and picking the clusters starting around in August, September, October, even into the beginning of November. And then when we get our first cold, you know, freezes, then you'll start to see leaves start to drop. And we'll start to, the canopy will give way, and you'll no longer, even if the fruit is still sitting there, you will no longer increase your sugar production. And then finally we go back into that cycle of the desiccation of the fruit begins,
yeah.
Mildew, pest disease, and fungus begins, and then it's...
So you got to get in there and harvest at that point.
Okay. Harvesting is important.
I bet you have an amazing refractometer.
Oh, I love a good refractometer. What's your favorite refractometer?
I have like a cheapo refractometer for my classroom, but can you tell our listeners what Brix is?
Yeah, so Brix is basically the measurement of sugar accumulation in the grape pulp. And how you go about doing a data collection or sampling would depend on, you know, for instance, if I'm sampling a 6-acre block of a Chardonnay, I may choose to take every fifth row in order to get a broad cross stroke or section of the 6 acres. And then I would send a sugar sampler down the row, and that's a real person, a real human individual.
Sounds like a job we could do, Austin.
Austin, you guys are welcome to
like,
come out.
I podcast and I sample sugar.
So actually, the California wine industry, if you look at winejobs.com, they look for interns every single year to come out and work just a season just to be a sugar sampler. It's very labor intensive. You get a lot of steps in. Your Apple Watch is constantly hitting.
Oh, yeah.
Your Garmin, whatever's tracking you, your phone.
20,000 steps.
20,000 steps a day, every single
wow.
day.
There you go. Yeah. Now, you brought up pruning, and I think remiss is the word? I think I would be remiss if I didn't bring up that you are a woman of many hats. Not only are you this hardcore awesome farmer and grape grower, but you also sell some pretty cool tools on the side. Can you tell us a little bit about your, I don't know if I want to call it a side hustle or what, but it's like you have, like I said, you have multiple careers, which is pretty interesting. And this is actually something that is kind of cool to me because I love a good pair of pruners. Can you highlight your little work that you do here?
Sure. So I work for the Felco Tool Company, which is a Swiss-made premium pruning shear out of Neuchâtel, Switzerland. We are the original pruning shear, which has all of the parts replaceable and a lifetime guarantee since 1945. And I would add that, yes, how my side hustle, if you will.
I don't know.
About,
yeah.
I don't know what to call it either. I mean, I spend a lot of time doing it because I'm passionate about it. And it really does set your gardening, your landscaping, your commercial grape growing. It sets you up for success. If you have the best tool for the right application, you know, it's so much more enjoyable to spend time out there either doing your work as a landscaper or a grape grower or a home gardener. But it's also, you know, a really great way to take very good care of your plants. A sharp blade is a safe blade, not only for you as an individual, but also I've just come from giving a presentation this past week, to a bunch of rose enthusiasts. And, you know, we talked about how if you have a dull blade and you make that cut with a bypass pruning shear and you're using a dull blade, you're basically sort of shredding the green plant material as you're making that cut, which is, again, opening your plants up to pests and disease.
A larger, rougher wound.
Exactly. Just, yeah. You want a clean cut. And so, yeah.
It's just harder when you're pruning all day with something that's kind of like stiff or just isn't cutting smoothly.
Right. The fatigue.
Something to be said about that.
Yeah. The fatigue in your hand is real. And particularly for those that, you know, again, have large, luscious gardens, they're doing a quarter acre or more. It doesn't even necessarily matter the size garden you have. If you're an enthusiast and you love being out there, you're having a tool in your hand for so many hours, it makes it a more enjoyable experience when you're not constantly meeting that resistance of a lesser or inferior tool. And so, yeah, the Felco Tool Company uses very premium, high-grade aluminum, which is very lightweight. And so you get that better ergonomics, less fatigue in your wrist and your arm. We use a proprietary mix of carbon steel with a higher content of nickel in it, which ultimately allows for your blade edge to be retained 3 times longer. And we really put a lot of thought into the design of the tool. So we offer a small, medium, and a large tool. We've become known for making specialty applications. We make a left and a right-handed tool. So all the lefties out there listening.
There we go. All you left-handers.
Exactly. We've got a tool for you. But we also make interesting tools like a cut-and-hold rose shear. And what that means is, let me hand this.
Oh, is that like a new age anvil one? That's a little different.
So what that does is I see a lot of home gardeners using this, but it is used in the commercial flower world, and that allows you to get into the interior depths of a rose and, yes, exactly, make your cut of your stalk and pull it out and set it on your cart to go into the production line of roses.
That's pretty sweet. Actually, it has like a little like bird beak on there to grab it.
Yep.
Oh, that looks like a little raven's.
Yep.
Raven's beak. That's fun. I love a good pair of tools. I was going to tell you. I don't want to be a fanboy over Felco's because I'm not getting paid by Felco. But when I used to work in the nursery a long time ago when I was a youngin, and we each got our own Felco to kind of work with, and I remember we loved it so much it almost became like Kleenex to us, where the name of the brand became the name of the item, where I wouldn't say, hand me my pruners. I'd say, where's my Felcos? Can you hand me my Felcos? Oh, yeah, right there. Yeah. So it was kind of fun, because I think early on I kind of learned, oh, wait, this is, like, it's nice to have something. It's almost like when someone gives you, like, you get a tool.
Yep.
In your life, you're like, wait, this is more than a tool. It's actually, it, like, means something. It's, yep. And I'm going to take care of it. It'll take care of me. You know, and yeah. I don't mean to, like, talk so much about an item, but it is kind of nice when you kind of have a tool that works really well. Is there anything else you want to leave with our listeners today? Like, what do you love most about growing plants, cultivating life, farming, growing grapes? What do you think about that?
For me, you know, what I enjoy is, while I enjoy being with my crew and seeing that beginning, middle, and end of the season and seeing the harvest come to fruition, and my crew loves to guess, how much tonnage do you have? What is it? And it's so spectacular to see them, they who have worked in the field all year long to produce this, and they feel the abundance of the harvest at the end of the season, and that's exciting for them. So I really enjoy the camaraderie that being a grower affords me. But I also, getting back to my fruit trees, I mean, it's nice to have something to give. I think is a really nice way to create community, and that's what gardening can do for all of us, right? It's a great conversation starter, that's for sure.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Jennifer. I really appreciate your time, and hopefully we'll get you back on again in the future because you were a lot of fun.
Sure, would love to be it.
All right, well, we are back. Big thank you to Jennifer for coming all the way out from Napa, sharing your wine, sharing your knowledge, and showing us your tools. She just had so much to show us and so much to share. It was a blast.
It was rad. I ended up getting a carbide sharpener out of it. It just says this little tiny tool that for sharpening your pruners, and you actually replace the little carbide tip on there. I'm sold.
Very cool.
And I'm easily bought though.
And you've been using Felco's for a long time.
Absolutely. It's actually one of those things where it's, you don't want to gush over something like, oh, but I truly appreciate the brand, its quality. I've used them before in the past. The pruners are excellent.
Yeah.
And they're you can replace all. I mean, it's kind of cool. I don't want to make it a commercial, but sure. They're fantastic tools to use. I've used them. Like I said, it was, for me, it became more than like, I didn't even call my pruners. I called them my Felcos.
That's cool.
They became something different. So it's kind of fun to have a tool when you're out in the garden working a lot, or whether it's or farm even, when you're working a lot.
Mm-hmm.
If you rely on that. It's an extension of who you are, your hand at the time. And if it makes your job easier and more efficient, it's worth its weight in gold. So it's kind of fun to learn about grapes and tools.
Yeah. And the grape stuff, again, it's so cool to think that you could grow grapes at home and even make your own wine at home.
There's so many different people trying a lot of different things.
Awesome.
And I think that's the fun thing about gardening and growing and cultivating. It opens up pathways in your life you never knew existed. And growing grapes is one of those things. And it's kind of fun to hear from a pro what some of those best practices are and some things to consider when growing.
Sure.
So I loved it. A great lesson, great time. Definitely got to get her back on.
Oh, I would love that. Big thank you to Jennifer for coming out. And I'm going to go ahead and add some links in the episode description so you can find her company and what she does. She is from Thompson Vineyards, and then she also works for Felco. So I'll put links to both of those websites in the episode description. That's all the time we have for this week. Kevin, go ahead and take us out.
Awesome. Thank you, Austin. And also a huge thank you to Jennifer Thompson for making it out for this episode. And thank you to our listeners for tuning in this week. It's always great to have you here. Please come back next week for more garden adventures. We are going to get into it. There's still a lot of shenanigans to be had.
I like a good shenanigan.
Yeah. So until then, it's time for us to bud break out of here, Austin. Yeah. You ready to bud break out of here?
Yeah, I am.
All right, we're breaking out. Have a great week, everybody. Get out in that garden if you can. And until next week, happy gardening to you all. And please never stop growing.
All right, bud break.
Bud break. Grow grapes and bud break.